Holy schedule change, Batman! I'm Batman, the podcast will now be coming to you every Monday. No longer do you have to wait until the end of the week for your fix of your whams and pals. All new episodes of I'm Batman, the podcast will be posted Mondays for the entire Bat family to enjoy. Starting today, join us in an all-new Bat Time, same Bat channel for I'm Batman, the podcast. Hello everybody, please allow myself to introduce myself. I'm your host, Captain Marvelous, and welcome to the 80th episode of I'm Batman, the podcast, the show where I chronologically review each episode of the 1992 Batman the Animated Series. Once again, we have reached the end of another season, as this is the last episode of Season 3. So there's still few episodes left. I believe the entire series runs for about 110 episodes, so we are at episode 80. Let's dance the dance, they dance in France. Let's get to it. This week's episode is titled Deep Freeze, original air date November 26th, 1994. This is, once again, as I mentioned, the last episode of Season 3. So, 110 episodes, we are at episode 80, so we still got 30 left. But, hey, time goes fast. The title card is an awesome painting of Mr. Freeze's silhouette lit by a blue light. It's actually very simple, but it looks really, really cool. We start off at Blackgate, or is it Stonegate? Okay, I always get the two mixed up. I call it Stonegate when it's Blackgate, or I call it Blackgate when it's Stonegate. The reason is because one of these is the name of the prison in the comics. The other one's the name of the cartoon. I don't know why they changed it. Confuses the hell out of me. I can't remember which is which. It's a prison. That's all you need to know. Suddenly, though, a robot rises out of the water. Now, the robot looks awfully familiar to any fans of animation, but we're going to get to that later in the show notes. The robot walks towards the prison and breaks through the wall. The guards shoot at it, but they do no damage. The robot spins his arms around like Zangief from Street Fighter and knocks out all the guards. And like they've been throwing grenades at him, and that just there's nothing that's stopping this thing. We cut to a prison cell, and we see that it's Mr. Freeze's cell. He sees the commotion inside, but he doesn't seem to care. The robot suddenly uses a freeze ray similar to Mr. Freeze's own and breaks the wall to Freeze's cell. Freeze tries to run away in fear, but the robot captures him and puts him inside himself. Like, the robot opens up a compartment in his chest and it just throws Mr. Freeze in there. We cut to see that Batman and Robin are watching the video of the breakout in the Batcave. Robin thinks that Freeze was only acting and he was in on the escape all along. But Batman doesn't think so, since Freeze wouldn't be scared easily because he's supposed to be a man void of emotions. Robin suggests that they consult their own robot expert. And we fade to the apartment of Carl Rossum. You may remember Rossum from such episodes as Heart of Steel, Heart of Steel Part 2, and his Silicon Soul. Batman and Robin knock on the door, but they're greeted by something weird.
Greetings, Dynamic Duo. I'm your biggest fan.
What is it?
Just wanna help.
Poor little critter. I never could get his programming right.
Well, S my D, Batman. That was Batmite. Holy hell. I didn't expect to see him in this series. Okay, I knew he was coming out because I've seen the series before, but when I was a kid watching it, I did not expect that. Carl Rossum tells Batman that he doesn't build robots anymore. He is shown a picture of the robot from the breakout, and he recognizes it as M9. It was a robot design he made when he worked as a visioneer for Grant Walker, a theme park mogul. He says the design has been updated because he made like a smaller version. We cut to the ocean where the M9 robot is swimming, and he reaches what appears to be a city in the middle of the ocean. So it's like this huge, futuristic Atlantis-type city. The robot releases Mr. Freeze, and we meet the true villain of the episode, Grant Walker. Okay, so Grant Walker is basically just evil Walt Disney, or, well, I guess that's just regular Walt Disney. He looks like an old, like a mix of an old Walt Disney and, like, Vincent Price. So, we're gonna just call him Disney here, for humor's sake. Disney says that he has studied Mr. Freeze, and he needs his help to make his vision of the future a reality. Freeze is taken somewhere else when Disney is told of an unauthorized boat approaching. Disney tells his crew to dispose of it because he doesn't need trespassers this far into his plan. Robin finds it weird that a theme park mogul wants to kidnap Mr. Freeze, and Batman pretty much says what we all think of rich white people.
I still don't see why a theme park mogul would kidnap Mr. Freeze.
Men like Walker are obsessed with getting their own way, and they don't let little things like the law stop them.
Robin notices three objects coming in on radar, and we see that they are shark-shaped missiles, because even when he's killing you, Disney has that sense of wonder and imagination. Batman manages to dodge one of the missiles, which I guess are torpedoes since they are underwater, but he can't dodge the others, and we see a huge explosion from the water. Back inside the city, we see that Batman and Robin survived, of course, and are now inside the Ocean City. We go to Disney, and we see that he has given Mr. Freeze his suit back. Disney tells Freeze that it's a replica of his old suit that he built himself. He even made the Freeze gun functional. Freeze then destroys the M9 robot and tells Disney that he should do the same to him. And for some reason, like, Walt Disney is, like, surprised by this. Wouldn't this be the first thing you expect if you give a criminal his guns back? Like, you all remember Demolition Man? The first thing that Wesley Snipes tried to do was kill that dude. It's just that he was programmed and he couldn't do it. That's the only reason. So, why didn't he didn't have a fail-safe device? In case Mr. Freeze was gonna shoot you, he didn't have a button on his stupid cane that would, like, deactivate the suit or something? This just seems like a really huge oversight on his part. Disney asked Mr. Freeze to hear him out.
Yes. Logically, I should do the same to you.
Just hear me out, please. As I said, I've studied you and your work. Do you realize that in your frozen state, you'll age much slower than an ordinary human? You're practically immortal, my friend.
Yes, eternal life trapped in this wretched shell. What a miserable joke.
Oh, miserable to you, but a godsend to me. Look at me, Mr. Freeze. I'm an old man. I've created wonders in my lifetime, but there is still so much to do. I want to change as you have, to become, like you, a being of blessed eternal cold.
You're insane.
So yeah, Disney wants to be frozen to become immortal. Disney reveals to Freeze that he has his wife, Nora, and he has the technology to cure her. Freeze agrees to the deal. Back inside the city, we see that it's actually populated by a bunch of people dressed in blue and yellow jumpsuits. They look a lot like if you ever played Fallout, they look like the people from the shelters. They're all wearing, like, blue and yellow jumpsuits, and they're all white and blonde. I am not joking. Every person we see on the screen that populates the city is blonde and white, and for some reason, there's a lot of guys. I think I maybe spotted one woman. That's the only reason I know that it wasn't just a city full of blonde guys. A little weird. They are gathering for some kind of speech at a stadium. We see that Batman and Robin have broken in through the ceiling. So the huge crowd gathers, and we see Disney appear on a huge screen, kind of like that movie, that Big Brother from that movie, 1984, I think it's called. I haven't seen it. I know it's a book. Before you, oh, but the book, I haven't read it, or I probably did in school. I don't know. But either way, he appears in this huge screen. And we finally find out what this whole city is all about.
Welcome, friends. Thanks to all our hard work, Oceana's nearly up and running. Now, while most folks believe Oceana's just another theme park, we know better. Fact of the matter is, it's not too nice out there anymore. Crime, hatred, violence, things keep going on like that. It could mean the end of civilization. That's why I decided to build a city where good folks can live in peace. A new Garden of Eden, you might say, from which a new race of people can spring. Now, of course, you can't have spring without a little winter. About 5 years of it, I'd say. Now, don't anybody worry. We'll all be warm as toast in here. As for those folks outside, well, it's sad, but I'm only speeding up what they were doing to themselves.
Brother, he's all hard, isn't he?
Walker's a madman.
Wait. Disney said most folks think Oceania is just another theme park? So is this a theme park that never opens and has no rides? Because seriously, it's just a city, like outside in the ocean. No one finds it weird. This is just a theme park where a bunch of people just happen to live. Batman and Robin are spotted by these flying robots and have a fight with them, but they're ultimately captured. They are taken to Disney himself, where Batman and Robin now see that Mr. Freeze is working with them. Freeze traps them in a block of ice. And, okay, so it's not really a block of ice. He kind of, like, ties them up with a rope of ice. It's really weird. It's just a ring of ice around them, so they're not really, like, inside a block of ice. Disney is about to undergo that freeze procedure, so he's wearing a suit just like Mr. Freeze. He wants Batman and Robin to witness this for some reason. Freeze boots up the machine and everything works fine, actually. So Disney is now just like Mr. Freeze with enhanced strength and he's immortal and everything. Disney asks Freeze to join him in destroying the city, but Freeze doesn't care about this whole thing or about Disney's plan. He just wants to be with his wife. Batman then guilt trips Freeze into helping him out.
You can't let Walker do this. Billions of people will perish.
That's not my concern. All that matters is I once again have my wife and the means to restore her.
She'll wake up in a dead, frozen world that you helped destroy. She'll hate you for that.
Silence.
You think you're alone now? Wait until she learns the truth.
I said silence!
So Freeze does this face like, oh crap, he's right. And he reluctantly frees Batman and Robin from the ice and agrees to help them. Disney prepares the cannon, which is about the size of a skyscraper. No one in Gotham sees this. No one outside the city notices this theme park, quote unquote, has a giant cannon the size of a building aimed at you. Freeze shows up, and Disney thinks that he's there to help, but Freeze starts destroying the equipment with his freeze ray. An M9 robot grabs Freeze and starts cracking his helmet, but Robin saves him. Robin is then trapped by the robots, but Batman saves him. Freeze grabs Disney and throws him into a vat of chemicals. Disney attacks Freeze, but Freeze freezes him to the side of the vat. Freeze turns up the power to the cannon to overload it and destroy the whole city. Freeze appears on the big screen and tells everyone to evacuate. The city starts being destroyed by like huge chunks of ice just appearing from the ground and destroying everything. And everyone runs to these huge boats. It reminds me of the movie 2012. If you haven't seen that, you're one of the lucky ones. So Batman, Robin, and Freeze are getting away from there, and Batman tells Freeze to go with him, because there's nothing that could be done for his wife. But Freeze refuses. And then it just seems weird to me, Batman ties up Mr. Freeze and tries to force him to go with him. Freeze just breaks the cable and tells Batman that he has bigger things to worry about than him at the moment. Freeze then shoots Robin, trapping him in a block of ice from head to toe, and this time it's not just ice handcuffs or nothing, like he does put Robin in a huge block of ice. So Batman takes his cape off and he puts it on top of Robin. I don't think that's how this works, dude. I don't think your cape is gonna keep him warm if he's trapped in a giant block of ice. Batman takes Robin to safety on a boat, and we see that the entire city blows up in a huge mushroom cloud. We see below on the ocean a huge chunk of ice fall to the ground, and Walt Disney is trapped inside of it. He is now immortal and trapped in ice, and this is the last time we ever see of him in this series. And don't email me any crap about, well, in the comics. Yes, I know what he did in the comics, but I'm talking about the series on TV. Dick and Bruce are in the Batcave as Dick recovers from being frozen. They wonder if it's the last time they would ever see Freeze, but Bruce doesn't think it is. We fade to an iceberg floating in the ocean, and inside is Mr. Freeze with his wife, Nora. The end. So the end of this episode, interestingly enough, actually leads directly to the second Batman the Animated Series feature-length movie titled Batman and Robin Sub-Zero. In that movie, Mr. Freeze is actually living out, like, in Antarctica or something, where he has his wife in, like, a block of ice or something. So, basically, what happened to him here leads directly into that. Maybe I'll review that movie, maybe I won't. I saw it a couple of weeks ago, and it's not good. It's really not good. But who knows, I'll maybe do a review on that. This marks the second appearance of Mr. Freeze. So think about it. Mr. Freeze, who has become an iconic villain thanks to Batman the Animated Series, has only appeared in two episodes, the first one being episode 3. This is episode 80. So we've gone 77 weeks. More. 77 episodes, because this hasn't aired like every week. You know, they take breaks. They take like summer breaks and all that. We haven't seen this guy in 2 years, and yet his one origin episode was iconic enough, it was good enough, where it like revamped his whole character into making him one of like Batman's most famous bad guys now. Like, everybody loves Mr. Freeze. And in its entirety, this is the last time we're going to see Mr. Freeze in this incarnation of the series. As I mentioned, this is the last episode of Season 3. We get Season 4, which consists of only 5 episodes, believe it or not. And then we go into the remake. Well, not remake. We go into the redesign era, which is titled differently. Like, this is titled The Adventures of Batman and Robin. The other one's called, Batman Gotham Knights or something like that. But this is the last time we get this version of Mr. Freeze, and we will only see him again once more. So what this villain that this series made into this iconic Batman villain is only seen 3 times throughout the series. So, I mean, that just goes to show you the love they showed to the character. So some other notes here. The robots. I mentioned how the robots look very familiar. And that is because they are the robots from the Superman cartoon, The Mechanical Monsters, from 1941. You can actually go on YouTube and see this. This is a Fleischer Brothers cartoon from back in the 40s. So this is where actually Batman the Animated Series got a lot of its inspiration. And they use that design of the robots. Except in that series, the robots are more blocky, squared. In this, they're sleeker, more rounded. So it's kind of like an updated version of that. You could also see these robots in the movie Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, which was a whole other thing that, once again, maybe I'll do a Gotham Goes Hollywood on. I won't get into it here, but you could see the same design robots in that movie. This one was really fun. Batmite. We got Batmite in this episode. And I mentioned earlier that I didn't think we'd be seeing him here because this is a realistic world take on Batmite, and not until we get Superman, the Animated Series, where they do start introducing more elements of magic and like supernatural things happening. I didn't think we would see this. Batmite is an imp from the Mite dimension. I believe he's the same dimension as Mr. Mixis Spitlick, who also makes an appearance in this episode if you pay close attention. While Mr. Mixis Spitlick actually comes from the fifth dimension, they are very similar characters in that they are both like these little big-headed, like genie-type characters. They have powers beyond belief, and it just wouldn't fit into this world. Batmite is Batman's biggest fan. So he's this little chunky, big-headed dude dressed like Batman with big, instead of the pointy ears, he has like big floppy ears, kind of like a bunny. He has buck teeth, he's chunky, like little weird cartoon-looking kid, or imp, I guess. And he flies around, he's kind of like the Great Gazoo, if you remember that from the Flintstones, the little green dude. He's like that. He is Batman's biggest fan, so he always wants to see Batman overcome the odds. So he puts Batman in all these scenarios where they're supremely dangerous, but he's having fun. He thinks he knows his hero is going to get out of it no matter what. As I mentioned, we do get Mr. Mixie Spitlick here. When they go into Carl Rossum's apartment, if you look in the background, Carl Rossum has built several toys for himself. They're like little robot helpers that he has around the house. You could see one of them looks just like Mr. Mixie Spitlick. One of them looks like Crypto the Super Dog, which was Superman's dog. And yes, he has all the superpowers that Superman has because his dad's a jerk. So apparently Crypto was used to test out the first shuttle. So if you remember Superman's origin story, Krypton explodes, so they put Superman in the shuttle that sends him to Earth. In order to test out that shuttle, Superman's dad put their dog in one and shot it out to Earth. And that's how we got Crypto the Super Dog. There's also Streaky the Super Cat, which is a little cat that's a pet of the Kents. He also gets superpowers when Supergirl exposes him to Kryptonite X, I believe. And yeah, it's like this whole weird thing of super pets. We had like, we had Streaky the Cat, we had Crypto, we had, I believe, Beppo the Super Monkey, and then there was like a horse that was in love with Supergirl because he used to be a centaur but got turned into a horse. It's this whole weird thing. Batmite's voice in this episode, as I played the clip above, or earlier, I meant. He is voiced by Pat Fraley, most famously known as the voice of Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon in the 80s. So that was a fun thing. Grant Walker, which is our villain of our episode, he's basically Walt Disney. I mentioned the white people with the blonde hair, as the rumors would suggest that Walt Disney was a Nazi. Walt Disney, the people that worked for him were called Imagineers. Here they're called Visioneers, according to Carl Rossum. Grant Walker is voiced by I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Daniel O'Herlihy. Which may not sound familiar to you, but you'll know him as the corrupt CEO villain in two famous movies from the 80s. Most famously, RoboCop. In RoboCop 2, he plays the old man. And he is the main villain in Halloween 3, The Season of the Witch from 1982. And that is the Halloween movie that does not have Michael Myers in it. That's the one where they're putting on the creepy mask and all that. So those are the show notes for this week. Let's get to the Batcave Archives.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
All right, the Batcave Archives is the part of the show where we rank each episode we have reviewed thus far. Once again, I mentioned this is episode 80. If you want to see the full list, go to our Facebook group. Be sure to join. Just look for I'm Batman, the podcast. You can join us there, see the list there. Where would I rank this episode? I think this episode was a lot of fun. It's a really weird one because it's another sci-fi adventure. Where you kind of have to just suspend your disbelief of things. Like I mentioned, nobody notices this strange city popping up in the ocean. They just think it's a theme park. All of a sudden, we got this like really futuristic, world-changing technology with these robots. There's no investigation into an entire city just blowing up and no one dying from that. It's just really odd, but it's a fun episode. I really like it. I think they kept really true to the Mr. Freeze character on this one. And I mentioned that because we're going to see him again, as I mentioned in one episode. And there is that feature-length movie. And in that movie, Mr. Freeze is awful. He is nothing like the Mr. Freeze we have come to know here. And that, to me, kind of ruins that movie. But I think this one keeps really true to him. I like the story. I think Walt Disney as a villain is inspired, but I don't know. I don't like him. He doesn't really do much. He gets turned into Mr. Freeze Jr. and then kind of really does nothing. I mean, when I mentioned he fought Mr. Freeze, he literally just hits him with a pipe once and that's it. Where would I rank this episode? Let's look at the 30s. In the 30s, we have the episode House and Garden with Poison Ivy growing her plant family. And actually, I don't know, dude. I think that this episode, man, it's a tough one. I like that episode a lot. So I think it's going to rank a little lower. At number 31, we have Harley's Holiday. That's the episode where she is gets out of Arkham, but she kind of goes off the rails on her first day out. Number 32, Second Chance. That's the episode with Harvey Dent trying to eliminate his Two-Face persona. At number 33, we have Point of View. And that's the episode where the three police officers, Montoya, Bullock, and a rookie, tell their different point of view stories of their Batman adventure. I think that this one is better than that one. Right below that, we have See No Evil, the one with the invisible band. But no, I think this episode should rank higher than POV. Is it as good as Second Chance? I don't know, man. I really like Harvey Dent. That's Two-Face is my favorite Batman villain, as I mentioned many times before. And it's just that episode is actually more emotional because of the friendship of Bruce and Harvey. Two-Face trying to basically kill himself in two ways. I mean, Harvey Dent is trying to kill Two-Face. Two-Face is trying to kill Harvey Dent. So it just works on more levels. So, as I said, they kind of keep close to it with the Freeze character here, but it's not as emotional as this episode or as even Freeze's first appearance. So, at our new number 33, we're going to rank Deep Freeze. All right, everybody, thank you for listening. And remember, if you have any questions, suggestions, or thoughts on the reviewed episodes or the show in general, send them to captain_marvelous1@yahoo.com. I have been your host, Captain Marvelous, and remember, no matter where you're from, no matter who you are, we are Visioneers. Everybody, Captain Marvel is here with your Halloween movie reviews. Once again, I've been watching a horror movie every day of the month for Halloween. Sometimes I'll even watch bonus ones. So I've actually watched more than 31 movies in the 31 days. Let's start with the list. At number 25, I watched Puppet Master 8, The Legacy from 2003. This movie, I saw it because, as I mentioned, I believe last week or 2 weeks ago when I saw Puppet Master 2, I have the disc collection of all 9 Puppet Master movies, at least 9 up to that point. I know there's been 2 or 3 more released now. Puppet Master 8, I saw it because that was the only one I believe I hadn't seen. Somehow I skipped 8 and went straight to 9. And I think there's a reason why I skipped this one. It is a clip show. It literally is just them telling you the whole story from a chronological view. So you literally just get clips of each Puppet Master movie. So you get clips of Puppet Master 1 and 2 and 3 and the other ones just in the order of the story as it's told. So it's really weird. It's like an hour, 20-minute clip show. Would I recommend this one? Maybe if you watched 1 or 2 Puppet Masters or you want to catch up on them without seeing all the other ones. But you know what? I would say stay away from that one. At number 26, we have another doll movie. This one's called Doll Graveyard from 2005. And it's actually by Charles Band. That's the same guy that created the Puppet Master puppets. This one, it's about a girl who gets killed by her dad, gets buried in the backyard along with her dolls. And then, like, 70 years later or whatever, in 2005, this kid that lives in the house now finds the dolls. He takes them into his room. His sister's having a party. And then the dolls come to life and they start killing everybody. It's a short movie, first of all. It's about 1 hour and 10 minutes, and you don't get to see any of the puppets or any of the killings until about 45 minutes into the movie. So it's kind of just boring. There's nothing really happening. The puppets don't look really good. I say stay away from this one. This one's not good. At number 27, I saw See No Evil 2 from 2014. This is the sequel to See No Evil, the horror movie from WWE starring Kane. So yeah, Kane is Jacob Goodnight in this sequel, which takes a lot of cues from Halloween 2, taking place entirely in a hospital or in a morgue, to be exact. It also stars the girl from the Halloween franchises. Her name skips my mind at the moment. She's the one that played Michael Myers' niece, the little girl. She's in this movie. She's the main hero of the movie. I liked it. I had a lot of fun with this movie. My problem with the first movie is that, to me, it was just Kane. I didn't see it any differently. Just Kane, the wrestler, killing people. This movie, it's kind of the same. But that's my problem, personally, that I can't see it past being Kane. He does look cool this time around. He has, the butcher apron. He's wearing a mask. His eye is missing. He looks really cool. So, I really had a lot of fun with this one. I do recommend See No Evil 2. At number 28, I saw a movie titled Backcountry from 2014. This one is on Netflix. And, it's okay. It's a movie about two people that go camping, they get lost, and they are attacked by a bear. I expected more from it. It's really nothing much happens. It's basically just dumb people go camping. It's the whole thing of, I'm macho, I don't need a map, I know where I'm going. And nope, you don't know, you get lost. Now a bear ate you. It's based on a true story, which kind of ruined it for me right away, because I said, well, if it's based on a true story and there's only two people, that means one of them survived to tell the story, obviously. So that kind of ruined that for me. And I don't know, nothing much happens in the movie. They try to scare you. There is some tense moments, but then there's no payoff to it. The whole action with the bear, there's only two scenes, and they take place way at the end of the movie. This one, I would suggest, I say you skip it. Number 29, I saw the movie titled Monster Mash the Movie, a movie based on a play titled The Bridge is Out, You'll Have to Stay the Night. It's awful. This movie is horrible. This one's from 1995. It stars Candace Cameron, if you remember her as DJ from Full House, or DJ from Fuller House to all you new listeners or younger listeners out there now. It's like a really low rent, low budget Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's about two college kids going to a Halloween party. Their truck breaks down, so they go for help in a castle. And then the castle is all these monsters. You got Dracula, Wolfman, Igor, Dr. Frankenstein, the Frankenstein's monster, the mummy. It's not fun, though. It's like really cheap and low budget. The guy that sings the Monster Mash song actually plays Dr. Frankenstein. I didn't know that until after I watched the movie, because every time he spoke, it sounded like the Monster Mash guy. And I was wondering, like, wait, is that him? Or are they cutting clips from the song into his speech? There's even a point where he sings the Monster Mash. And it's just, man, it's not good. Bobby Pickett, that's the singer's name, and he plays Dr. Frankenstein in this. I saw it out of curiosity, because Monster Mash, of course, it's the best Halloween / Valentine's Day song out there. So I was looking forward to this one. I did not like this one at all. This one's on YouTube, but I say just stay away from it completely. Number 30, I saw Ghostbusters from 1984. Now, this movie's a classic. Anybody who's seen it knows it. I mean, not much else to say about it. I love this movie when I was a kid, and every time we would go to the video store, the movie I always wanted to rent was Ghostbusters. Now, after 30-something years, I finally own it on DVD. I never had bought it until this weekend. Now I own it. If you haven't seen it, watch it. Watch Ghostbusters, the original. Part 2's not good, and the remake is not good. Nothing to do with them being females. It's just not a good movie. So I do not recommend those, but I do recommend Ghostbusters 1984. And at number 31, okay, this is kind of a cheat since I'm recording this the day before the last day of October, Halloween. I won't have time to record this tomorrow, so I'm doing this now. It's going to be Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. That is my favorite horror movie of all time. I've been doing this tradition of watching horror movies for the month of October for the last 4 years. This is my fourth year. Every single year, I end it with Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Halloween night. It is an amazing movie. It's not as gory as you think. It's not as gory as people make it out to seem. There's really not that many violent or bloody scenes, I should say. There's violence, lots of violence, implied violence a lot. But there's not really that many gory scenes. There's maybe like two or three kills where you see the gore, where you see some blood. But other than that, it's all kind of just scary, like psychologically, because it looks like something that could take place like real, like in reality. There's no supernatural things going on here. It's just some freaking psycho family out in the middle of nowhere. What I love about it is that there's very, very minimal music in this. Most of the scenes are just quiet. There's no soundtrack, nothing. Nowadays, movies prepare you for that. You start hearing the music and you know something, like it's swelling up to this crescendo of, oop, here comes a jump scare or something dumb like that. There's no music in this. There's kind of just, stuff just happens. There's really no build up to it. I mean, when Leatherface first appears, he just appears out of nowhere, scares the hell out of you, because there's no build up, nothing. He just comes out of nowhere. Dude opens the door and all of a sudden there's this enormous dude with a hammer. And you're just caught off guard like you would be in real life. This is a true classic for me. Once again, my favorite Halloween movie of all time. I totally recommend it. So thank you for joining me on this journey for this year of watching Halloween movies. Hopefully, I will be still doing a show next year so I can do it all over again. I'm not sure because, once again, as I'm saying, we're running low on the episodes. We're kind of getting toward the end now. So we'll see how it goes, everybody. Thank you for joining me. And happy Halloween!
Working in the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. My love Notari in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abodes to catch a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. Zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, oh, we're digging the sounds. He got on chains backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
Wow.
Out from his coffin, Drax's voice did ring.
Wow.
Seems she was troubled by just one thing. Wow, wow. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, wow. Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It's now a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Wow. Now everything's cool. Drax a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on with a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash
fool! Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy.
Wow.